Welcome to TMZ Live. Charles here.
And Babcock here.
So, Billy Dee Williams, an absolute legend, and a guy who is so respected in Hollywood, said something that I'm really struggling with. But I want to try to understand, because it is coming from Billy Dee Williams, yeah. And that carries some weight. Obviously, Billy Dee Williams from the Star Wars movies, Lady Sings the Blues. What an amazing actor.
Oh, a legend.
But he has an opinion about blackface that I'm not sure a lot of other people, at least people I've heard talk about it, have shared. He was on Bill Maher's podcast on Club Random, and the issue of blackface came up. They were talking about Laurence Olivier, who played Othello in 1965, and very either famously or infamously, right. Depending on your viewpoint, did wear blackface for the role. So here is Billy's take on this, not just on the 1965 role, but what actors can and should do now.
When he did Othello, I fell out laughing. I thought it was hysterical. I loved it. But see, I love that kind of stuff.
Today, they would never let you do that.
Why?
Blackface?
Why not?
Because
you should do it.
That's your point of view.
If you're an actor, you should do anything you want to do. Whatever you think you can do, you should be able to do it.
But again, not to bring up your sore point, but you actually lived in a period where you couldn't do that. Where you couldn't play the part you should have played.
But it didn't matter.
The point is, comes from an era.
You don't go through life feeling like I'm a victim.
Correct. I couldn't agree with that more.
Wow. Even Bill Maher was like, blackface?
He couldn't believe it.
It's absolutely fascinating. He catches Bill Maher off guard with this viewpoint because it's interesting. It reminded me a bit of how Caitlyn Jenner has a certain view on transgender rights that you don't expect, but because she's transgender, she has these views and it puts people off guard. It seems like Bill Maher was caught out of left field. He didn't think Billy Dee Williams had these feelings, and you kind of have to wrestle with it in a different way.
So a couple of things. I don't agree with what he said about actors should be able to do whatever they want now.
Right.
I guess you can, and if the audience hates it, then they don't go see it.
When you're making a movie,
Hollywood learns their lesson. Right.
When you're making a movie or a TV show, the idea is to make it as authentic as possible. Right. There are so many capable black actors. Like, why do you need to hire a white guy?
Which
to
is
paint
what
his
Bill
face?
Was saying to him is like, yeah, you should be. Why aren't you upset that they didn't hire you to play Othello? Instead, they gave it to Laurence
Olivier.
It shouldn't
have been like that.
That was Bill's point. Bill was upset for him. You should have been able to play that.
And I do think, there's a distinction made between acting, that's art, and people just wearing blackface, which we disgustingly still see happen.
And that's what I don't get. I mean, we have seen in recent years everyone from state leaders.
Look at Canada.
Justin Trudeau, obviously, wasn't in office when he did it, but that was something. Jimmy Fallon has done it. Any number of people we've seen do Jimmy Fallon. Also, Juliana Huff.
Right. Yeah.
Like at Halloween. Mm-hmm. The Tropic Thunder one doesn't bother me because they were mocking that.
But I think it comes down to
an issue of intent. I mean, if the intent is mockery and making fun of someone's race, obviously it's socially unacceptable. If the intent is to act or to inhabit a role like Othello, they're not intending to mock anyone. They're just trying to act.
No, it just seems like there's better choices in that case. Just pick
I would agree. I do want to be on record that I am not supportive of the 1965 version of Othello. I want to get that out there.
I'm glad you did. But listen, this is Billy Dee Williams. And by the way, the other thing that I love about this clip is you saw what's on the table, right? Billy Dee Williams is, what, 80, 81, something like that? Still an ambassador for Colt 45. This man has been doing this for like 50 years.
Could drink whatever he wants.
Been with Colt 45.
Hey guys, I'm Toya. I'm from Orlando, and I want to let you know what I think. First of all, I was very, very upset about this. We don't play with this type of thing. So I had to call my mom and my grandma about this, and they right on the street is you had to do whatever you had to back in the 70s or 80s to be a successful actor. But I feel like other races playing blackface may be questionable. That's a question I'd have for the director.
Yeah, I mean, look, to Billy's point, you could... if a director says you want to do this and the actor wants to do it, sure, you can.
You're right.
But if you offend and piss off a large number of people,
right,
then nobody goes to see your project, and that's right. Freedom of speech, right?
Doesn't make sense.
That's how it works. All right, we are going to move on now to Calvin Harris. And this has to do with Calvin Harris and Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
And something that Calvin Harris's wife just said. So,
okay. You
know, of course, Calvin Harris and Taylor Swift dated.
Oh, yeah.
It was a very bad breakup. And Calvin's now married to a woman named Vic Hope. She is a host on the BBC, has a show called Going Home. And Vic and her co-host took a call from a listener who mentioned something about her habits when her husband leaves the house, which led to Vic revealing something that happens when Calvin leaves their house.
Hi, Vic and Katie, says this message. My husband is out at jiu-jitsu 3 times a week, and my activities range from epilating my legs to gardening to headphones and to all the tunes he hates while I dance and mime into in my pants.
Yeah, that's a good thing to do. You can listen to all the music that he hates while he's out of the house.
As soon as my husband goes away, I listen to Taylor Swift. So that's just when I get my little fit, just a little fill, just a couple of songs, get out of my system, then it's done.
Good, it's good.
You hear the pause before Vic? She's like, when my husband goes out of the house, and there was a pause.
Right.
Because I got to imagine that she was thinking, should I say
this? Do I say it or do I not?
I'm not surprised that Vic is a Taylor Swift fan. I think.
Well, I'm a little.
The vast
Why
majority
are you surprised,
people.
Babcock?
No,
she's around the age of Taylor Swift. Every single girl likes Taylor Swift.
Do you know what her husband did with Taylor Swift, Corey?
Yes, I know what her husband did with Taylor Swift. The whole world knows what the husband did with Taylor Swift, but it's still Taylor Swift, and she's a female. She's going to like Taylor Swift.
But Courtney,
Calvin knows this.
I thought there might be some jealousy.
No, there's not some jealousy. And I will say, maybe she can get away with being like, well, Calvin, you know, I like the songs that you did with Taylor, not the songs about you, just the ones that you helped produce. She's helping them make money.
It is a betrayal. That's my point.
It is not a betrayal, Charles.
For the very reason that you don't listen to the Taylor Swift songs while he's in the house, then you don't tell everyone, don't tell the world that you listen to it while he leaves the house.
She's being the best wife that she can be.
That's the same thing as listening to it in front of
him. Did he know this?
He had to have known it.
I hope he did.
You know he knew it, and he just wanted to like hide it deep down inside. But of course he knows. It's Taylor Swift.
So you think she's told him that, just so you know, hon, when you leave the house, what's happening here is that I'm playing Taylor Swift. If she told him, then it's not a betrayal.
Then it's okay.
That's fine.
Right. It could bring up
but
bad
I don't
memories.
Know that
you know, even if you've moved on and you're happy, breakups hurt, and it could bring up bad stuff, Charles.
Hey, I'm Russ from Las Vegas. How you doing, TMZ? So my opinion about Calvin Harris and Vicky Hood, it's like, you know, Vicky Hood, sorry about that. Music moves the world, man. So being a husband and wife is like, there has to be some type of fun within the household, you know, whether she's playing any genre of music. But yeah, I'm pretty sure Calvin Harris is probably a funny guy. So if I was him, I would just leave and say, all right, babe, I'm leaving for the day. I'll see you later. But I would put my ear to the door. And if I hear Taylor Swift, I'll just, I see you and they're getting all Swifty on me. Okay.
The reality is that Calvin Harris himself is probably.
You think he listens in the
some
car?
Taylor Swift.
Right. Because he can't put it on in front of her because that could create. Shoot down my jealousy theory.
I would imagine. Yeah. Hey, before we wrap up this block, gotta point out something really cool that happened in the national championship. You know that the men's national championship was played last night. UConn beat Purdue.
Dominating.
And aside from the fact that they dominated and that they've now won 2 years in a row, Bill Murray was courtside.
Yeah, this
for very good reason, not just because he's a basketball
fan. Right, not he is a basketball fan, but that's not why he was there, Charles. His son right there, Luke Murray, is an assistant coach, and he is credited as being this offensive genius, this guru, and UConn
maybe came up with UConn's
offense and one of the most dominant teams of the last few decades, and pretty cool.
Nice for Bill Murray.
Son.
You can go and cheer, talk about having a personal reason to cheer for UConn.
Yeah, not too
bad. Cool for him.
Well, in fact, guys, you know, Dan Hurley just said recently that he believes that Luke is going to be a head coach one day. So, you know, you can call him a nepo baby all you want, but the guy knows his stuff.
Might be sooner than later, too. Well, I would not be surprised very, very soon if
I feel
teams
like
can't call it.
I feel like nepo baby doesn't apply here because being Bill Murray's son doesn't get you anywhere in basketball.
Right.
It's not like Bill Murray.
Right.
It's not like Bill Murray's a
may open some doors, the name, but and sports, too. Sports, it's wins and losses.
Right.
You know, it's that's like, only if you're not any good.
It's the only thing that got him to that level. Right. Jelly Roll having a big week. We told you that, one, about his plane having to make an emergency landing. He's fine, he and his wife. Then went on to the CMAs where he had a big night, won some awards there. And then he went on a podcast and had told an interesting story about Diddy. And obviously everything about Diddy is very, very interesting these days.
Yeah.
People looking at things through a different lens, which I don't think is always fair to Diddy. But here's Jelly Roll's story. He was on a podcast. He was talking about the night he had an opportunity to meet Diddy. They were both on a late night show together as they were guests on Kimmel back in October. And he had a chance. He had never met Diddy.
Right.
So this is how he describes that evening and his decision to not meet with Diddy.
This is the first time in my career where they said, do you want to meet such and such? And I said, yeah. And I started walking that way. And as I was getting down the hallway, this is a true story. I said, nah.
Better not.
And went and got back in the car.
Really?
Swear. I don't know what it was.
Do you think you'd
and I made a joke at first.
Like
I was
feeling?
Like, who don't want to meet the guy that got Tupac killed? And nobody thought that was funny. So I was like, oh, that's a bomb. Maybe I shouldn't go do this anyway. So I was already skeptical because I thought I had a funny one. And I was like, I probably wouldn't say that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we were walking. I was just like, I don't know. It's just something like very seldom does things rub me in a way where I was like, I don't even know if that's a picture I want.
To have.
Yeah.
It's shocking, too, because as a musician, you would think you'd want to meet this guy who has been one of the most influential people in all
and
of music.
And remember that Jelly Roll came from hip-hop to start
right.
with, the country now.
But you would think he'd jump on that chance, Charles.
Right.
And the interesting thing was Cassie filed the lawsuit in November. So, Charles, you said this was in October. So this was the month before the lawsuit was filed and all this stuff started coming out. I mean, I guess Diddy has always kind of been, you know, there's been whispers about things that goes on
here
in the
and there, but,
and
but you also have to remember, prior to Cassie's lawsuit, he was throwing huge parties. Right. I mean, we've seen the video from his 50th birthday party, and everybody is there. So
true.
It's weird that Jelly Roll had this feeling about him at that point.
The other thing, though, is like I've watched a lot of Jelly Roll interviews and seen him talk, and he just seems like a super down-to-earth, genuine dude. And honestly, I don't really know why he would make this up or lie about this story.
I don't know what gain it is to him to make this story up. Sometimes you just get a feeling, and it's hard to explain. And not that anything would have happened if he went and he met Diddy backstage at Kimmel.
Although, I do think if he went back and he made the Tupac joke, would not have gone over well. So, like you said, maybe it's better that it didn't happen and things happened for reasons. Yeah. But the meeting never happened. And then, of course, I would imagine that Jelly Roll felt like then the lawsuit got filed.
Can you imagine how he felt?
He saw all the allegations and probably felt like, oh, well, that's why.
Later.
So he had talked actually in that interview, the other thing he got into, he didn't name names, but he said that there's been certain times where like they've been on a red carpet and people have tried to be like, oh, you guys should just group up and take a photo. And he's like, I don't really want to be seen in the same photo as these people. And that would have been a prime example if, you know, he has a photo with Diddy backstage at Jimmy Fallon and then all this stuff comes out.
Right.
Jess Rogge, Orange County, California. I think Jelly Roll made the right decision by avoiding any association with Diddy. He went with his gut, which was the smart move, especially with the current allegations.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's weird is that it was months before those allegations.
It's easy to say it now, but none of this was out.
Right. Obviously, you could say that Diddy's more toxic now and that people are... And we've talked about the fact that there aren't a lot of people, with the exception of like Stevie J, who are speaking up on his behalf.
That was Stevie J's whole point in posting that video.
Right. It's just weird that Jelly Roll had that feeling before. All right. Moving on now to Morgan Wallen and some new video we got from the evening, that late night, Sunday night into Monday morning when police say he threw a chair off the rooftop of a bar in Nashville. The bar is called Chiefs. He was on the sixth floor when he... Police say they saw surveillance video of him doing this, throwing the chair over, which landed on the ground feet away from police officers who were on Broadway. So this is surveillance footage. It's actually a city camera that we found the footage, slowed it down here. It's highlighted, but we're going to slow it down. You can see this chair go.
It wasn't just dropped, Charles, too. I mean, it looks like that thing was hurled off the edge.
Right. So this was not, there's no way he can go into court, and he is going to end up in court He's been, you know, he's now facing three felonies.
Right.
You can't say that this was, I bumped into something or it was an accident.
Right. No,
you
that
have
was
to
hurled.
Actively throw that over the edge.
Right. The only saving grace for him is that it did not hit those police officers, Charles, because this would be a completely, an entirely different conversation that could badly, badly hurt somebody or if not kill them.
Yeah, you guys, and the reason, I mean, you guys are saying it yourselves, but the reason why this is important, seeing this video and with the force that it was thrown and the trajectory, it kind of gives him, it takes away that plausible deniability. Because, like, you know, there were witnesses that have told cops he threw it. Apparently, they have surveillance video that shows he threw it, too. That could probably be just as damning. But if the video was a little fuzzy or a little hazy, didn't quite exactly show him do it, maybe he could have been like, oh, it was an accident, it slipped over the edge or something. But that's not the case, clearly. It was clearly thrown. And again, we've been kind of, it's a broken record at this point, but like, what was he thinking or what was he doing? And that's something that Morgan Wallen has yet to address at this point. His attorney says he's cooperating with the cops. That goes without saying, obviously. But what was he doing? Was he mad? Was he joking? Was he drunk? But even if he was drunk, what for what reason? Oh, look what I can do. It makes no sense at all because you got to figure he would know how dangerous. Because like the chair itself, there's actual video of the chair that was picked up by a cop down below, and you can see it. It's not a huge chair or anything, but like it's a chair. It's like it's got metal legs and a frame and everything. So it could 100% have killed somebody. And the fact, you know, it's a mystery. It's very strange.
Yeah, it is bizarre, and I know, like as you said, that he's cooperating. But, and we said this yesterday, that I'll be really surprised if there's not a move made on his part. I don't want to say that it's only being done for appearances. Mm. I mean, it may appear because to my eyes, Morgan Wallen may have an issue with alcohol.
Well, 2020, and Charles, so, public intoxication, right? A disorderly conduct. 2021, not a criminal charge, but the N-word on the ring camera. And it seems like alcohol is at the
center of all those things.
And,
so.
and we know Morgan Wallen sings about, I mean, he sings about booze. He literally has like several songs named after booze. So it's part of his whole reputation, part of his whole persona.
What's up, guys? My name is Shelby O'Connor, and I'm from Los Angeles, California. Thanks for having me. So there is no denying that Morgan has an issue with alcohol. He talks about drinking whiskey. He talks about being drunk in almost every single one of his songs. And there is zero excuse to his behavior. But I'm wondering if this was some sort of emotional reaction just because his baby mama and ex-girlfriend got engaged and married the same week, and the day that she got married was the same day that he threw the chair off the roof.
Well, I know we spoke to that security guard yesterday. You said that there was no arguing with anyone. He was just standing there and just decided to be a jackass,
right?
According to the security guard. By the way, there were nominations came out today for the ACMs.
Yep.
And he got 6 nominations. So this is going to be a thing in a few months when this award show goes down. Does Morgan Wallen show up? Right. Is he invited? We're going through it just like we did a few years ago.
I feel like
ago.
We've been here.
Yeah. Well, the case of Ethan Crumley's parents was already a landmark case in this country when Jennifer and James Crumley were convicted. Today, they found out their fates as far as sentencing. And I think there was definitely a message that the judge wanted to send here because they got the maximum. They got 10 to 15 years, which is what prosecutors wanted.
Wow.
Although the guidelines for sentencing here was much lower,
right?
Around 4 years.
Right.
And the prosecutors wanted more. The judge gave it to them. And it does seem like this is a message being sent to parents everywhere, to prosecutors around the country, because there is a feeling that this has now set a precedent for parents being responsible for the actions of their children when it comes to firearms.
Right.
And it is...
Right. School shootings are it's an epidemic, Charles, obviously. And I think a lot of times there are missed signals and perhaps the parents could have done something in a lot of cases.
That seems to be the message from the court here. Will it spread across the country? Is that something other prosecutors will be doing? Joining us right now to talk about that is a former prosecutor, now a defense attorney, Mark Eiglarsh, who actually has a connection to the school shooting that happened at Parkland, and he is joining us right now. Mark, welcome to TMZ Live.
My connection, just so we're clear, so nobody thinks
that I had
blood
that you represented
defending someone
exactly.
Who was accused of being a coward and not going in, and he was acquitted.
Thank you. So, Mark, tell us what was your reaction to this sentence today, that the judge basically gave them the maximum that they could get?
It was a foregone conclusion. It would have taken extraordinary courage and turning her back on politics and turning her back on the world watching to give them anything less than the maximum sentence. That was absolutely going to happen. There is something so compelling about the loss of a child. And when the courtroom is filled with that raw emotion, the judge, I believe, was going to do whatever they asked.
Mark, we've seen other school shootings. We've seen parents who haven't been charged. This not the case. What is the message to parents across the country?
Well, these facts were just very unique. I mean, these jurors found that these parents missed repeated warnings. They also aided him by giving a gun to someone, essentially making that available to him when he was not mentally stable. So the message then is, parents, you need to know your kids, even though we really don't know our kids. You really need to find out, because if they do something this extraordinary, this heinous, you will be held accountable.
Obviously, there's the part where I think they clearly made the point in this case, just knowing what your kids are up to, looking for the warning signs. But is it more about the access to the gun? Was that the real nail in the coffin here for Ethan Crumley's parents, that the gun was so accessible to him? And is that the message to parents, that if you have a weapon in the house, it is your responsibility to make sure that it does not fall into someone else's hands other than yours?
Yeah, you make an excellent, excellent, compelling point. Number one, this is about gun accountability. Absent the father and the mother agreeing to bring that gun into that child's life, this would not have happened. Worse, the father had an obligation to keep it under lock and key so his teenage son couldn't get access to it, and he failed in that regard. So there's no question it's about gun safety. But it's bigger than that, too. I think the second component is, if you see signs of mental illness, you can't ignore those signs. Now, the parents say, we just didn't see it. We thought our child was totally normal, like the kid next door. But there was enough evidence where the jurors found, you knew or should have known that he was pretty close to cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, and you needed to do something about that. He even allegedly asked for help. He said he was hearing voices, and they didn't do anything. If those are truly the facts, and that's what the jurors found, then they were just culpably negligent and should have done something.
Then, Mark, going forward, the reason this case has gotten so much attention, obviously it is a school shooting, and those always get attention, as they should, but the fact that the parents were being held liable here, what are you hearing just from other prosecutors that about this really being a precedent, and that this is something going forward, when you have an instance like this where there are school shootings or just a shooting involving where the shooter is a teenager, is a child, that this is something prosecutors around the country are going to be doing, that they will go after the parents?
With 100% certainty, prosecutors will use this as precedent, and they should, if the facts warrant it. You know, most kids, most school shooters don't announce it to people around them before they do it. So the question is, how close to that can you get? If the signs are there and parents should have known and jurors feel like we're getting close to culpable negligence, not just mere negligence, which is what's required to sue someone in civil court to get money. We're talking about criminal negligence. That's what jurors found. If it gets to that point, then I think prosecutors will not hesitate to prosecute someone, especially because victims' families now know there is precedent.
Yeah, I think that's exactly why so many eyes are on this. And it is going to be interesting the next time this comes up, because I think we'll be hearing about the Crumley case for many, many years to come, unfortunately, because this is something we're dealing with.
Yeah.
Mark, thank you so much for being with us. I really appreciate your insight.
My pleasure, and let's hope it never comes up again.
That would be great.
Yeah.
We'll see going forward.
Yeah.
All right, we are going to take a break. When we come back, the return of Good Times, the classic TV show. I grew up on it in the 70s. There is now an animated version coming to Netflix this week. What could go wrong, right? Well, apparently a lot, according to people who have seen the trailer and are really upset about the tone of this show. We're gonna be joined by one of the OG Good Times cast members, Bernadette Stanis. She played Thelma. She'll be here to give us her opinion of the new version of Good Times. I have to admit, I was thrilled when I heard that they were going to be rebooting one of my favorite shows from my childhood, Good Times. It's coming back as an animated version, though.
Oh, cool.
It's going to be on Netflix. It comes out on Friday. And the excitement that I had has been tempered by the backlash that started once the trailer dropped for this. And there are a lot of people who are upset about what they saw as this new depiction of the Evans family. And it's not, just so we're clear, it's not the Evans, it's not redoing the Good Times from the 70s. This is supposed to be the
decades
new generation. So decades have passed. It's the new Evans family.
Right, they're relatives.
But here's a little bit of the trailer so you can understand, to get an idea of what it is that some people are upset about. And then we're going to be joined by one of the cast members, Thelma, from the original Good Times, going to be here to talk about the new Good Times. But here is a little bit of the show.
I have important news.
Let me guess. The state called, and they want to cut you a disability check for your face. Hold up. You can get paid for that?
This is from a fool who stares at his orange juice every morning.
It says concentrate on the box. Who the dummy now? Me for not wearing a condom.
Junior's repeating the 10th grade for the third time.
Is there anything you can suggest to help him get to the drive-thru?
Can he do OnlyFans?
We're just as good as the Evans of old.
Isn't that just dynamite?
But the truth is, we're the Evans of new.
Okay, so people have some very strong opinions about that show, and the most of the backlash is that why is the Evans family, decades later, generations later, still struggling in poverty in Chicago? Joining us right now to talk about this, Bernadette Stanis, who played Thelma Evans on the original Good Times, and she is joining us right now. Bernadette, welcome to TMZ Live.
Thank you for having me.
I have to say up front, I am an incredible fan. I loved the show. I loved your character growing up, so it is an honor to be talking to you. So that being said, what did you think? What did you think when you first heard that they were going to be doing this? And I know you have a small voice role on the show, but what did you think before they even contacted you when you heard that they were going to be doing this?
Well, I was very excited. And I had no idea, you know, what it was or what was going to happen. So I must say this, though. Jimmy Walker did contact Norman's office in 2020. And he pitched a Good Times cartoon, which would include all of us except for Esther Roll. And we didn't hear anything back from them, but a few months later, or I think 6 months later, they came up and said they have a cartoon. Sony said they had a cartoon coming. And so so my manager called up Norman's office to see if we were included. I mean, if you're going to do that, you know, let us know. So they said, oh, no, it's going to be generations later and it's going to be like progressive or whatever. And but Brent Miller loves us very much, loves me and Jimmy. I know that. And so he said, but I can give you a small role in there because it's about, you know, a new generation. So I have my little role is called Peaches. I'm one of the project women who are fighting for the rights, you know, that kind of thing. And Jimmy has a small role, too. But that's all that was said. But when I did see it, it looked like we were still in the project. And the things that were said, and it wasn't quite what I know Esther Rowe would agree to. So it kind of, you know, took me back a little bit on that.
Bernadette, what I found really interesting there is that you were told when the Norman you were referring to, for those that are Norman Lear, who was the executive producer of the original, but you said that you were told it was going to be a cartoon and that it was going to be progressive. That's exactly the criticism, is that it doesn't feel progressive at all. And you do mention the late, great Esther Roll, who played your mom on the show. And that it wouldn't be something she's proud of. It's just weird that they said to you there was going to be progressive, but that's exactly what it doesn't feel like.
I was a bit disappointed because it really was not a reflection of the good times that we know. So when you see something that actually is not progressive, it kind of brings you back into the projects two generations later. So Thelma had a baby. What happened to that baby? I wanted to be a surgeon. I guess I was. JJ was a famous artist. So you have positive images generations before that. And then all of a sudden you see this, you know, I'm not knocking it because I don't know what the whole show is going to be. Maybe they'll bring it, lean it more back, you know, back to a more positive situation. But when you have the name Good Times on top of that, our audience for 50 years have been really in our corner. You know, they've always supported us. So they were disappointed that they didn't have it more progressive.
Have they said anything to you, Bernadette? Have the producers explained this to you? Have they said anything about the way it turned out?
Absolutely not.
Interesting. And I know that part of the criticism that people expected more, that Steph Curry and Seth MacFarlane are executive producing. Obviously, Norman Lear has passed. I don't know. I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed. I honestly thought that it was, even when I knew it was animated, I thought it was going to be sort of a retelling, that it was putting them back in the 70s. Right. I didn't realize that it was them modern and current day, because now I get that criticism. That totally makes sense. But, you know, we'll see how it does. Like we said,
it's just a trailer at this point. We'll see when it comes out later this week.
Yeah.
Well, I want to say something about my friend Norman Lear. I was at his 100th birthday, and I did mention, you know, I said, Norman, well, how do you think about the cartoon? How do you like the cartoon? And how's it going to be? You know, I'm trying to get some information. But, you know, so he kind of smiled. He looked at me, and it was as if he didn't really understand what I was, you know, so maybe it was a senior moment. He is 100. He was 100, you know. So I don't know if it was that, but I love Norman. And I do believe that he maybe was told the same thing I was told. I don't know. But, you know, I'm sure, you know, hey, because he only produced quality work. So I got to say in his behalf, I don't know if he really understood what it was going to be about, or he just knew it was going to be a cartoon for Good Times. Because like everyone else, you think of Good Times, you think you have the title on there, you automatically think of us.
Yeah. They better keep the theme. If they don't have the theme song, now I'm out.
Now
you're
done.
I'm not watching. Thelma, thank you so much for being this. By the way, I know you have a book coming out this fall. Good Times, Ain't We Lucky We Got Them. This is your memoir about making the show?
Yes, how I saw Good Times while I was on there. You know, a lot of stories about, you know, my relationship with all of my cast members, and it's written by myself and my daughter, Brittany Rose.
Bernadette, you are such a good actress that Charles called you Thelma.
I called you Thelma.
Because that's how great of an actress.
Who I grew up. Why I grew up watching you as Thelma.
I've always been called Thelma by all my fans and everybody. So I have embraced it a long time ago.
Excellent. Well, as well you should. Thank you so much for being with us, Bernadette. /Thelma. Love you, love you, love you so much. Thank you for being with us. Appreciate it.
I really do.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you for being here, Bernadette.
I'm going to watch it. I'm definitely going to give it a chance, despite the criticism, and then we'll see. Robert Downey Jr. has been celebrated a lot this year in Hollywood because of his role in Oppenheimer, which won him an Oscar, won him a Golden Globe, several awards. I think he actually swept at all the acting awards this year for Best Supporting Actor. And one of his old buddies is speaking up on his behalf, and that would be Mel Gibson. Someone we don't hear a lot from these days. You know, Mel Gibson never really fully recovered, his career didn't, from the DUI arrest in 2006, where he went on the anti-Semitic tirade.
Yeah.
Well, Esquire was doing a profile on Robert Downey Jr., and they spoke to Mel Gibson, and here's why. Because Mel Gibson really credits Robert Downey Jr. for standing up for him at the darkest point in his career. And this is an interesting summary of what happened. He said, "One time I got into a bit of a sticky situation where it kind of ended my career. I was drunk in the back of a police car and I said some stupid blank. And all of a sudden, blacklisted. I'm the poster boy for cancel." A couple of years into that, he invited me to some kind of award he was getting. We always had this kind of seesaw thing where if he was on the wagon, I was falling off. And if I was on the wagon, he was falling off. So I was pretty much non-existent in Hollywood at the time, and he stood up and spoke for me. It was a bold and generous and kind gesture. I loved him for that. That was in 2011,
right.
So 5 years after the fact, and Robert Downey Jr. was accepting an award, and he said, you know, look, nobody in Hollywood is without sin.
Yeah.
Embraced him on stage.
Right. And you said his career is still not back and it's 2024. In 2011, it was still non-existent. I mean, nothing was happening for Mel.
And part of the reason why this was a big deal isn't just because Robert Downey Jr. is a big star speaking out on behalf of Mel Gibson, but also because Robert Downey Jr. is Jewish, which I'm sure a lot of Jewish people, of course, were very offended by the anti-Semitic remarks that Gibson made. So to have not just a star, but a Jew too, stand up for him, I'm sure meant a lot. And you have to keep in mind that these two also had a long history together. They even co-starred together in the movie Air America back in 1990. So Robert definitely knew Mel well.
And Robert had been through his fair share, albeit different, issues and controversies, right? Of course.
Yeah. So, you know, and while Mel Gibson's career didn't fully recover, he did go on to act in, you know, several other films. Right. I think he directed.
Yeah, I mean, I think at one time, Charles, films, he may have been the, you know, if not was. The biggest, he was one of the biggest movie stars in the world. He'll never get back there again. That's just a reality. But yeah, he's got a career for himself now, at least.
Hi, I'm Getz Natty in Wisconsin. Mel Gibson that night was drinking at a place called Moonshadows in Malibu, which is one of the finest bars in the world. I remember also at the time, not only did Robert Downey Jr. have Mel Gibson's back, but so did Whoopi Goldberg, who publicly said, "Mel's my friend." And it seems about right for the public at large to be unforgiving about something like this, but for somebody's friends and families to have their back. It says good things about RDJ as a person. It means he's a good friend, irrespective of what Mel did.
Yeah, both things can be true, that the public can be very upset and have their reaction
and
to it.
Rightfully so.
But Mel's friends can have their reaction to it.
Right.
I think the message from Jessica Simpson is don't believe all the stuff you're hearing and just pay attention to what you are seeing, as in these photos that she posted from Mexico, where she and her husband, Eric, are on vacation with their family. And the rumors that have been going around for a couple of months now are that they are on the outs and headed for divorce. And I think that was mainly based on the fact that, one, they hadn't been seen out together for a few months leading up to February. And then she posted a photo where she didn't have her ring on.
Right.
So people thought, oh, it's definitely
two and two together, the relationship.
But then they went out together on Valentine's Day. And so that quieted a few people.
Right.
Now,
a little bit.
This is the, they're showing, look, we're all together as a family. We're on vacation. I will say, I haven't seen in any of these photos Jessica's ring. Now, that doesn't mean she might be wearing it, but she just didn't show it off at any point.
Right.
Yeah, but also there's a lot of people that don't wear their wedding ring when they go on vacation. Also, Jessica has lost a lot of weight. Maybe the ring doesn't fit at this time. Look, whatever the case is, they're obviously trying to take a stand by saying our marriage is good, we're still in love. But like you guys said, they've been married for 10 years. A lot of people had wondered if they were still together. She hasn't posted him on her Instagram page for such a long time.
Well, that,
so
that's
that, that also was a sign.
I feel like
by the
that
way,
part
in Cabo,
Jessica
brought her mom, Tina. So it seems like maybe the mom, grandma, is there to take care of the kids while they have some
the
alone time.
The only word of caution I would say is we've also seen Kyle Richards and Mauricio Umanski go on vacations together with their family for a long time.
Doesn't necessarily.
And we know where their marriage is. Just saying.
My name is Janelle Benoit, and I'm in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Listen, like your girl said earlier, a lot of celebrities do not wear their rings out in public. Doesn't that mean that their relationship is over? Especially when you're in a resort like Cabo, you're around a lot of water, you can lose your wedding ring. On the other hand, we got to stop looking at these people as relationship goals, because they could be having problems and they could be working it out. And this is their way of doing it, by bringing the mom so they could have some one-on-one time while their kids are with them. Just
exactly.
saying.
Exactly.
Good
right.
point.
Stop looking at other people's relationships
right.
as a goal for you. Just do what you got to do. All right. What else you guys want to talk about?
Hey, my name is Sizzle Fu. I'm from Montbello, Colorado. And I'm here to talk about Billy Dee Williams. And I hope whenever they translate whatever he was saying into French, they don't put "we" in it anywhere, because we do not agree with him. We do not. Bill Maher knew we didn't agree either. So he understood. I'm with Bill Maher on this.
Yeah. Bill Maher was really shocked. He's like, you can say that, but I'm not down with that. One more.
Hi, this is Addison from Galveston County, Texas. So regarding Calvin Harris's and his relationship, I think a lot of us should start taking notes, because I think it's really admirable that she's willing to acknowledge that Calvin Harris dated such a big star like Taylor Swift, and she's like going out of her way not to make it awkward. So I just think it's really admirable that she's taking that much consideration in his feelings.
Yeah. Okay. It would be considerate, except then she just told everyone that she did it, so now it's not considerate.
But he might know. Remember, he may know.
Maybe.
Maybe.
All right, as I said in the tease, I've never seen anybody order wings like this, but the reality is there aren't a lot of people as talented as Jamie Foxx, who decides to order his food sitting by the piano and singing, and it's awesome.
200 lemon pepper barbecue wings, two, yes, I need.
Don't make me stop going on this
phone. Baby, we'll go ahead and blow on it. You doing it like that? Lemon pepper.
That's the best part. All right. She is the best part.
She's feeling the pressure to respond, I guess.
And then he's making us all look bad. How am I going to look later when I order my wings and I just say?
You should try it, Mike. Try it, record it. And yeah, that was just called the wing stop.
That was awesome.
Pretty good day at the office if Jamie Foxx can sing to you.
Not too bad.
I'm waiting. Yeah. It hasn't happened. Yeah. That's going to do it for us. We'll see you tomorrow.